This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show.
Jolene.
I won't try to sing that.
Oh, I thought we were all singing.
We were.
I
left you guys hanging out there.
You did. You're hurtful. Why?
There's three of us here. One of us can sing. One of us decided to bow out, which left you, Flippo.
I can't sing. It must have been Julia doing it right. It's so sad because I don't know when I'm wrong. And I'll just sing with gusto.
You sing with conviction. Right?
I'm wrong. I don't know the notes. It's terrible.
Thank you.
Yes,
you're welcome.
Welcome to the Blacklist After Show.
It's awful.
After Buzz After Show episode 15.
Is it really 15?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ticking through them here. Episode 15, The Judge.
The Judge.
That's Flip Wilson used to say. Flippo, what'd he say?
Here come the judge.
That's exactly right. For people who are under 60 and get that reference. I don't know. Over 60, I should say. I'm sorry. Blacklist, we're back for episode 15, joined by, as always, by my man, Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
We're joined, not as always, not by Nando Velasquez, who's having a week off. He's doing some stuff. So he's not here, but we all are joined by Julia
Kearley.
For a moment?
No, I did not.
Hello, gentlemen. Hi, everybody.
You should have a name tag made up just in case Joe goes blank.
Okay.
I've only known her for years. we're back with the Blacklist here, guys. I mean, I don't know. We had some problems the last episode, I think. I mean, at least I did.
Yeah, it wasn't big problems, just a little bit of like, eh.
Yeah, it felt like a little bit of a filler episode.
Yeah.
I feel like that this feels...
a little lackluster last week.
I feel like this feels like a little bit of a filler episode as well.
I'm going to respectfully disagree.
Well, I'm just going to lay it out.
Are you going to respectfully disagree too?
I think it's a little bit of a filler episode, but it had some meat, a little more meat, less filler, a little more meat. But it's not exactly, what I call a Cracker Jack episode.
I understand. Well, they can't all be Cracker Jack episodes because then we'd be dizzy with joy. And we can't have that.
No, we would not.
There would be accidents.
But people, this is a good one. So we have the judge. We have Blacklister number
57.
I mean, I'm so curious to see what the rationale is behind the numbers.
The ranking of the Blacklisters.
The ranking seems so effing random. But, you know, it's cool.
Everything Red does has a reason, though.
Sure.
So there's got to be a reason. I cannot see it. Sure. I cannot put it together.
Well, this episode was cool because we've got, like, you know, it was pretty much straightforward textbook Law and Order procedural, the whole thing. I mean, it was like there's a case. We're getting to the bottom of something. They're working the case. They're getting their leads. They solve it. But then we have what's going on with the B story with, you know, our man Tom Keene. And Jolene, a.k.a.
Lucy Brooks. Presumed dead.
A lot of interesting stuff going on. But let's get into the judge how we open the show seeing this mysterious man wandering the streets, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's you know, wandering around, and we don't know what the deal is. I didn't know if he was going to be an assassin. I didn't know if he had a bomb strapped to him.
I don't know. He was looking pretty thin. A little emaciated there. I don't know. Look too assassin-y to me.
I'm like, is this guy the judge? Is he the Blacklister? Because he's looking awful zombie-like, you know? I don't know. What did you think when you saw this guy?
Well, I was glad he wasn't the judge in the end. Yeah. Like, well, this is going to be very weird.
When the show usually opens with the Blacklister doing some Blacklist shit, right? Usually.
Not always.
No?
No.
No, I like the opening. I like the idea of, like, you know, I like that it was neighborly. The guy's like, hey, let me help you. You look like a mess.
Yes.
You know, and you know, he's got his, what do he have there? Is his federal prosecutor badge? I didn't know they had badges.
They do.
Oh, well, I learned.
Yes, they do.
There it is.
They flash it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. So we find out that this guy's been gone for 12 years and then
he was borderline comatose, right. Wasn't speaking,
right?
In sort of a trance.
Now, if you see Joe, if you see, or either of you, if you see a guy, if you're minding your own business driving in the snow in lovely rural Pennsylvania, and you see a guy, an emaciated beard guy, walking down the street, do you stop and go, "Hey, buddy"?
I would just think it's a homeless guy.
Let me just say this: there's an awful lot of conjecture in your whole point there. I live in Southern California, so we don't get any of that. What do you call that stuff?
Rural Pennsylvania.
No, but the stuff that fell from
snow.
Snow. We don't. We don't have any.
Nor do we.
Well, you know, it's bizarre because where we live, there's very little danger of anyone actually dying if we don't stop.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like we're driving along. Okay, well, he's homeless. That's okay. He's not going to die tonight, so I don't feel terrible. But in rural Pennsylvania, in the snow, I would imagine if you leave the guy alone in the middle of nowhere, he's probably going to die. So that's kind of on you.
Fair enough.
That's
true.
That's a little bit different. That's true. We're dealing with extreme weather conditions.
And I think, you know, like if you spend any time in the Midwest or the East Coast, people do seem a little more neighborly in the wintertime. It's because if you're not neighborly, people die. Hmm. We don't have that here.
I don't know what that's like.
It's interesting.
It's currently 80 degrees outside.
So you both
It's sunny and beautiful here in sunny, beautiful Los Angeles.
So you both would pick him up, obviously.
Clearly.
All right. So
also, it's not like he was in he was looking pretty tattered, pretty shabby. Not shabby chic, just shabby.
Right.
He's been in those clothes for 12 years. That's so, you know, I might feel good Samaritan-y.
So we find him. We find out who he is. And then then the FBI finds out this guy's been gone for... I mean, how does this case go to... our office here with Lizzie Keene and the gang. How does this get to them?
Oh, Red takes it to them.
No.
Doesn't he?
Take it to them, no.
Yeah. Red takes it to him. Avenging Angel. He gives the whole speech about the golem for the Jews and the every culture has their own version of the Avenging Angel. He gives him the case.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I was just testing you.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you were able to do that. But before we got to Ray, we meet our guy in the black caddy. We meet our cowboy friend.
We do.
Our
cowboy friend, which is my man Lance Reddick, who's you may know from Fringe and The Wire. And
Lost.
And Lost. And he's one of those cats, like when you show up, like when he shows up, like he has that sort of Sam Jackson badass dude. Like when he shows up, like, oh, this is a badass MF. Some shit's happening.
Yeah, don't tell me how to do my job. I'll do it. I'll do it my way. You leave me alone.
That was a great sequence. How's that? You gonna do this imitation of?
I'm not trying to do an imitation. I'm just telling you what he said.
No, but that was a good exchange in the car, like you know, with Lance Reddick. And so we see now that he's brought this guy in with the cowboy hat and it's Lance Reddick. So he already brings in this certain amount of gravitas to the scene.
Raw badassery.
Raw badassery to the scene. So you know that shit's about to jump off when
Absolutely.
He shows up. Red's going to him.
He's driving a 1978 big ass Cadillac.
As he should be.
You know what? My father had that exact model Cadillac, except it was blue. And
yes,
I grew up. Ah, damn it. They drive like huge boats. You feel like a king in that car.
You do.
Beautiful thing.
My uncle had one of those too. And he had a black one. He did not have the cowboy hat though.
Nah, cowboy hat's deep.
So it's which is another. I'll get to that later. So yes, I have a great exchange there. He says he's basically looking for Lucy, all information on Lucy, and that
he doesn't want to know where she is. He wants to know where she's been.
Right, he knows that.
What
already.
Is she up to? Yeah,
yeah, I know where she's at.
Yeah,
so that's not the issue.
So we're really getting into, starting to unravel. Like we're starting to really unwrap what's going on, peel back the layers of what's going on with Lucy, you know, with Lucy Brooks here. Which is very, very exciting to me. I'm really, like, I've been looking forward to this moment for a while. So, to find out what the hell's going on with Lucy and what the hell's going on with Tom Keen, which we found out today. Spader has this wonderful Spader moment, of course, with the...
I love hats.
Like a tension breaker.
Seven and a quarter there? I'm a seven and a half. Love it.
I'm just saying, like, if my man, like, I don't know what kind of badass he is. I'm assuming he's some sort of crazy badass, and I know that he does his job very well because he told Red not to worry about how I do my job. However, he can't be too inconspicuous as a 6'4" black guy in a giant cowboy hat, but sneaking around the hotel
in a giant, up in a giant Cadillac.
Someone might see him.
You feel that he's not inconspicuous?
I mean,
with a 10-gallon hat.
Let me sneak.
I think he might have had 15 gallons. That,
that
serious
could be
hat.
A 15-galloner.
Like how he just slides in that room like, But, you know, no one sees me. I've got the hat.
I'm like, it's like that episode of the A-Team back in the day where Murdoch's got, like, if you think white sheet, you're invisible. Like, that would remind me of that.
Or Face. Face with some glasses in it.
Right? Totally different.
Yes. Anyway. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's a badass, and I'm glad to see him here because that stuff. And, you know, this actually had two great guest stars. We also had Diane Wiest.
Oh, she's so good.
I love everything she does. I really do. She's in three of my favorite movies of all time.
Parenthood.
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Lost Boys. Edward Scissorhands.
High five on the first two. I'm not going to back in the third one, but I like those first two.
Yeah. So, it feels like they're sort of upping the stakes here with the guest stars, which
is
very
big
cool.
one.
And well, she's fantastic.
With Lance and her, and sort of classing up the joint, but she classes up the joint.
She's something special.
Right? I like to see her, and she did a great job. So, jumping back, we have that happen. I mean,
well, we cut to the teacher conference at that point. We see Tom, and we have the double entendres coming off with the editing books. I didn't quite follow what was going on, but some teacher was having an affair, right, with somebody's mom.
Some student's parent.
I think it's not appropriate. It was inappropriate. It was more the only thing we're supposed
apropos.
To be paying, thank you.
Yeah.
Only thing we're supposed to be paying attention to is all the Jolene.
All the footsies.
You know.
All the little slights she has. That's, I don't even know if they're double entendres, like quadruple entendres. They're obvious.
They weren't slights at all. They were very deliberate and heavy. You know, like,
yeah, meanwhile, he gets a phone call from his wife, puts it in his pocket.
Decline. He's like, what kind of person would cheat on their wife? Like, I don't know.
Are you good at keeping secrets?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have worked on me. Not Joe, because Joe's not into sevens. But, but you know, me who thinks she's, you know, maybe in the eight vicinity, I thought that would have worked on me. I mean, Joe, did you buy any of that seduction?
I'm sorry. If she'd stood next to you, it would have worked on you. That's about what she had to do.
I think that's fair.
If she was in line for coffee, it'd have worked on you.
Tough but fair.
You know what? I enjoyed that sequence because, you know, it seemed like this episode, we're talking about some real stuff. You know, we're talking about these people who are wrongly convicted, which happens all the time. That mm-hmm. is a real deal. That happens constantly. There are people that get convictions purely for their own elevation. And editing the books, I thought, was a little teeny thing. It wasn't a big deal, but it was like, hey, you know, we're tossing this in because this is a real thing. There are school boards talking about editing books all over the country. Mm-hmm. They're really trying to take these, you know, what we consider to be classics and change them to make them more palatable. And less edgy. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think that's, I'm glad they chose to, even though it's such a tiny little thing, I'm glad they chose to talk about that.
Right. Well, so we have really two, you know, I'll say three and a half, but two main storylines here going on, right? We have the judge and what's happening with the judge and how it affects the FBI, particularly our boy, Agent Cooper, mm-hmm. Our Assistant Director Cooper, I should say. And then we have what's going on with Tom. And then the sort of half storyline is how Red is sort of following
connected to
both. Yeah. So let's, for argument's sake here, let's not go linearly. Let's just deal with the judge storyline. Let's jump back to Tom because I want to get back to that later. So they find out that there's this person. He lets, you know, Red lets the folks know that there is this person who lives in this sort of shadow underground network, and they're you know, people are judged and passed around through secret prison, you know, networks, through books and, you know.
So it's a prisoner's court of last resort is what he says. So, right. Like, when all their appeals are exhausted, there's no other hope for them. They're either going to be serving a life sentence, pretty much, or be sentenced to death, as our guy Rifkin was.
Right.
So she's an eye for an eye.
Yes.
What she rules over.
Right. An eye for an eye. So there's this thing. So we find out that this network exists. We found out that the judge is out there. And then as they're investigating the judge, as they're investigating what's happening specifically, they find out that this last bit may involve someone named Harold Cooper.
Yes.
Well, you know, we do find out what our guy in the beginning, what the bearded crazy dude had, what he was in for, mm-hmm. you know, because he had a he got a 14-year sentence for armed robbery against Leonard Debs,
yep.
And there was a witness that had an alibi for him, and Hastings didn't tell the defense or the judge, and so this guy served 12 of the 14 years, and so what was interesting to me, character wise, is she releases him after 12 years, knowing, and Red points us out at the end that's the end of her line.
That will be her undoing.
That's it. But for her, it's all about justice. It's not about vengeance.
Right.
Yes.
So, as Red said.
Yes. So we meet our guy, Frank Gordon, who is the prison book depository guy, and it sounded like he served some time.
Yes.
Then he was done, but he kept donating his time to the prison. It sounds like he was kind of staying down there.
Yes.
And Cracker Jack FBI gets down there, and he floors our guy. Agent Wrestler.
Yeah.
He knocks Wrestler out, and he bones out. So Frank escapes, and then we hear the story about Alan Rifkin.
In doing that, he sees all the past notes pleading for her judgment.
Right.
And the one that they seem to be working on currently is Alan Ray Rifkin, who is the one connected to our guy, Harold Cooper.
Right.
So he...
No, go ahead.
So he's a Taliban fugitive. It turned out he served in the U.S. Army. Then he went back to Afghanistan to fight for the Taliban. He's scheduled for execution based on a village that was destroyed in Afghanistan. Now, he claims it was friendly fire, like we destroyed it from a Black Hawk helicopter. And Harold Cooper, who was the head of the FBI mission in Afghanistan at the time, he said he beat a confession out of him in a 2.5 hour window when they moved from one air base to another air base. And they changed the log.
It was keenly covered up on the logs.
Yes, to show that it was a half an hour and not 2.5 hours.
Okay. Let's go back. So that's our recap. So let's go back and dissect this a little bit. So as this was happening, did you guys get a sense? When we meet Ruth Kipling, Diane Wace, the spiritual advisor, Amnesty Collective. I mean, did anyone? I mean, Joe, you always have a nose for these things. Do you have any sense that she was probably early on? Who did you think the judge was? Do you have a sense early on that?
I didn't think it was her. I had no clue. I was actually really surprised. I thought, wow, she's such a heavy hitter, and it sounds like she's got such a small part. That's so weird. I wouldn't have expected. I really didn't even that. I was like, oh, it's weird.
Yeah.
I had an inkling for the same exact reason, because she's such a heavy hitter. And, you know, I'm sort of like conditioned. If I watch Law & Order SVU and you see a big guest star, you're like, it's not just going to be this one interview.
Yes.
I know what's happening. So in using that device and having someone that big and that well known and recognizable sort of leads me to believe that they're not going to take just a little bit role. This is going to be something meaty, especially for a woman like her.
I agree. When she showed up, I kind of thought, uh-oh. She's a judge.
And I was still shocked, I was still shocked with her character choices and her demeanor.
Yeah.
And so I think she did a phenomenal job.
Well, and look, it wasn't about like the reveal. I mean, I think that anyone could figure out that she's the judge at this point. I think that like the reveal came pretty much at the midway point, but it's really sort of how she, getting to see her be that blacklister and then how that her story was resolved was kind of cool, I thought. What about when this thing came up with Harold Cooper? I mean, I like this cool element of like, we're sort of investigating our own did you guys think Harold was dirty, or did you think that this was, what was your reaction to that? Did you think that this was really something that he was going to get popped for?
Not for anything. We play naive games if we want to, but if you become a traitor one way or the other, you join with the Taliban.
Yeah.
I was expecting, at least for all the angst that was going on, for there to be a 16-hour window where they had tortured him within an inch of his life.
Of course.
I was like, 2.5 hours? That's it?
Yeah.
That seems pretty nice. I don't have much patience for that. I don't have any pity for Rifkin. And I thought, based on what I've read of the Iraq War.
He deserved to die.
No, but based on what I've read of the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, these are very muddy and mushy. Nobody's wearing uniforms. You don't really know who's who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't imagine that there's a heck of a lot of... It didn't bother me over much.
Well,
what they were saying.
I mean, once it got to the meat of like, okay, maybe he did the right thing, but the wrong way, but I'm talking about early on, did you think that he did something bad, like he's a bad guy? Or did you think that he did the right thing the wrong way?
I've never really thought he was a bad guy. If we go back to the Ansel Garrick episode, he was willing to lay his life down for his people. And
it didn't really fit with what we know about Harold Cooper at this point, right?
What, him being a bad guy?
Yeah.
Doesn't fit? No, I don't think it fits at all. And, he gave us great amounts of credibility when Lizzie was looking into it and really saying she was going to report it. And he goes, do what you got
to
do. Because he believes in what he did.
Right. He does. I really like this episode was great because for like a pretty standard procedural, it touched on some really kind of serious themes. And it didn't really like go deep dive into them. But, the whole... death penalty, who should die, how they should die. You better be damn sure. You better be sure. Lizzie makes that comment like, this is ridiculous. We can't even prove his innocence. He's going to die. I think they were definitely trying to make some statements about the death penalty very, very not so subtly. And I think a good job. And then also the stuff you're talking about, Joe, about, you know, this sort of murky area here when you're dealing with the messiness of these wars and traitors and non-traitors and people and what's acceptable to us here in America versus what's acceptable on the battlefield and how you have to cover up. And that gets murky over
it
there.
It does. And what I think almost more important, because I think that's been talked about quite a bit, but I think more important is, you know, and I hesitate to make it a big deal, but it is. You know, the idea of law enforcement, as we understand it, is a new idea. This mm-hmm. is all very new. Mm-hmm. This goes back 150 years. That's it. Right. In the whole history of humankind, a police force, in the way we understand it today,
right.
is only 150 years old. A penal system like we have right now is only 100 years old. Mm-hmm. These are new ideas. These should be constantly evolving because they're not cooked yet. Right. The idea is that the United States has more people in prison than any other country in the world, period. Not mm-hmm. based on ratio, not based on the number of people in the country versus the number... No, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's insane. We have draconian laws right now that say you get 12, 15 years if you've got an ounce of weed. That's crazy stuff. Well, and this is going on constantly, and people are getting wrongful convictions over and over again. They're being proven to be wrong. And at the end of the day, it's too messy for this system because of its size to go back and undo a lot of it. And so that's kind of the mess we're in right now. And I think we all have this idea that it's always been this way, but it hasn't. And I think that's kind of what gets lost is the idea that this should be an evolving system.
Right. You said penal.
I did.
That's all I got.
I know. I
that's my takeaway.
My takeaway from that rant was like...
He said penal.
Penal.
I saw your eyes glaze over.
No, I'm kidding.
No, it was a great argument, actually.
No, I'm with you on all that. I think that it's kind of an interesting way. I feel like that this was a nice attempt. And I mean, like, last episode I talked about how I think they were attempting to do this sort of grifter, kind of a fun episode.
Right.
This episode I feel like they're attempting to do something really, like, not necessarily an issue episode, but really, they're really addressing some pretty serious themes here. And I think they really got at them in some ways. I did love the scene where, Cooper talked to his guy, the soon-to-be attorney.
Tom Connolly.
And, we have to contain this. And they had a conversation. I love that sort of like good old boys in the room. And one of the better scenes I've seen Megan Moon in, that scene with her and the two guys when she's confronting Harold Cooper. I mean, you're not impressed, Jules.
Well, you know what's interesting about that scene? I'll tell you what I thought.
I'm sorry.
I thought
it was an impressive scene. I thought Megan Boone did a great job in that scene.
I thought she overplayed the naivete, like, what? You hit him? How you hit him?
Right.
Like, come on,
but
really?
But I did buy into the fact that, like, she's standing up for herself, and I did buy into the fact that, like, she believes in Cooper, and, like, Cooper, tell me, what did you do? And he's like, you know, and the guy's in the corner is like, you don't have to answer that. The guy in the corner was sort of answering for Cooper, and she's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like the way that whole thing played out. I think that she did a good job on that. Maybe I'm alone. Julia?
But no, I agree with you, but I thought that scene served a dual purpose because you keep giving her looks and she keeps staring at you. I think that scene served a dual purpose in that you have, basically we're seeing, okay, this, what went on was totally illegal and it had to be covered up. And at the end of the day, it was for a bad guy.
Yeah.
But that's the deal here, that these powerful people do this all the time.
Sure.
And if we all decide collectively that it's okay in some circumstances, but it's not okay in others, then the rule of law really doesn't apply anymore. And in this instance, right, we say, okay, well, Cooper and Tom, they were right, so it's okay. But what if they were wrong? And how often does that happen? And I think that's kind of, you know,
all right,
that's kind of the deal.
Fair enough.
Julia,
yeah.
Did Megan Boone do a good job acting in that scene?
She was no Diane Weiss. Let's say that.
Crickets.
I can put her on the spot like that.
I'm just asking her faces.
I've made no bones about it. She is not my favorite.
Okay.
She has evolved in a certain amount since the pilot episode. I'll give her that. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't do it for me. She never has. Mm-hmm. She's very stiff to me, very mm-hmm. cold to me.
All right.
A lot of the time. So, but I mean, like I said, she's come a long way from where she started, and she's holding her own more and more each episode.
Okay, fair enough. That was very diplomatic, Julia Kearley.
I am not a cook.
That was very, very diplomatic. So we get into this, and we fit. So we you know, we have the sort of the turning point here, which is the execution scene, where, you know, it's that moment where you usually have the moment like, call the governor, you know, we have one last thing we can do. And it didn't happen. Like, we saw a dude getting killed, and I was affected by that. I mean, I didn't know, even though I didn't know, you know, if he was good or bad or what was happening, I was really affected by that moment. I think that was sort of intentional to make you think about sort of what we do here with the death penalty.
At that point, I feel like the audience members were really sold on the fact that this guy is innocent. He's gone this far with this to his very last breath.
Right.
And then they show Connolly and Cooper sitting there watching this man die, who we think is innocent, but they know isn't.
Right.
So it really kept with the themes of this entire episode of judgment.
Sure.
So we're judging from the information that we have, and we were wrong too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree. It was a nicely played sort of sequence, because it let the audience think one thing and then another thing was happening. It also got us to see Diane Weiss do some nice sort of reaction acting and really get us to sort of get what her invest in her character, how she really feels about the situation. So that was kind of cool.
And they didn't waste a damn second to pick up Cooper and Connolly. They were outside waiting. Now, you think, wouldn't it be smart if they know that Cooper is a target, especially if this man dies, whether it was right or wrong? Don't you think they'd put on a tracking device or extra detail?
They maybe have that scene where Cooper's like, nonsense. Like, I don't need any extra protection. Red Reddington's setting us all up. Like, he was very much, you know, he's the boss. You know, you don't go behind the boss's back and say, well, we're going to put a tracker in anyway.
I've chosen to believe that they did not kill the guys that were manning the trucks there.
Okay.
Just knocked them out.
Just knocked them out with happy, sweet, sleepy juice.
Right. Or just one of those old-fashioned...
Falcon grips.
Right.
Yeah. Which,
so have a sip of that.
Chop to the neck. Right? This old-fashioned guy, Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirked him. He Captain Kirked the hell out of him. Dun, 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 cry chop.
Fine. They were all... That's fair. And I think that... but we did get to see finally this prison system.
Well, we've seen it already. We got the goodnight mother and
we did. That's right.
We got the mother thing going on.
Right, that's true. But the whole, I mean, well, I'm not finally, but even before that, I'm saying we do see the prison scene. We did see Diane Weiss in action when she said it's feeding time. Was it feeding time?
Oh yeah. I mean, they were in there like horses, like cattle or whatever.
She had no problems. Right. With any, you know, I, one of the other, I think, sub themes of this episode is that there's a burden in judgment as well as, I guess we talk about, you know, no death penalty, yes, death penalty, and we get involved in judging the judges. I mean, that's something we all kind of get into, but there really is a burden on being the person to decide.
Right.
You know what I mean? And most of us, all of us here on this panel, have clearly decided we don't want any part of that. We're not involved in law enforcement. We're not involved in the judicial system. But, you know, I think so few people have I think it takes a certain amount of guts to get involved in that.
Yeah.
Because you are at any time life and death. Every time you get up and go to work in the morning, you know, you're deciding somebody's fate one way or the other. And that is a tremendous burden. So, and I think she wore that quite, I think Diane, she wore that, wonderfully.
That's and a level of commitment that I would never be prepared for.
Sure.
To live with that.
Well, that's the beauty of picking a Diane Weiss to play this role, because she's able to sort of, there's only a handful of actresses who maybe have that gravitas to be able to play that sort of quiet strength of like, this is, like she said, you know, we have a job to do, we're going to finish this job, or, you know, I forget the phrase.
And such a great juxtaposition of her demeanor, just her physicality.
Yeah, from the spiritual advisor
to
the judge.
To ready to put him in this shifty, makeshift, crazy electric chair.
That electric chair did not look like, it did not look safe.
It did not look safe. Not look like it was a good way to go.
I don't think that electric chair is OSHA approved.
It's like a coat hanger up top, a couple coat hangers, maybe.
Old Sparky. That Sparky. Made old Sparky look pretty good.
Yeah. So we, you know, just resolve this. We find out, you know, Red is able to, you know, Megan tells Red, what's going on, Megan? I'm sorry.
Lizzie
tells Red what's going on exactly, and the whole thing with Cooper, and from the plane he says he's got a flight, you know, you have to get to the, you have to get to, if you want to see, you have to get my man to talk, the attorney general, the, I'm sorry, bearded man, who they found, the
Hastings.
Oh.
You have to get Hastings to talk, otherwise you may never see Cooper again, and then he makes a trip to see his old buddy, the naval guy.
Richard.
Admiral Richard.
Which is sort of cool, again, to see. I love to see, you know, the more we get to know about Red's past, the better. I love, we know his criminal side, all his criminal activity, but we don't get a lot about his pre-rogue activity. So it's kind of cool to see that. And he says, like, you know, my naval blues pinch, you know.
I liked Richard in that scene. Like, you know, you could have played it like, you know, oh, what the hell?
Yeah.
He didn't. He was like, just stood at the steps and he looked at him and he's like,
what the fuck?
Haven't seen you in all these years.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch. You ruined my career.
Here you are.
My wife left me. Hope you're happy. Nice. Not like, I'm going to call the, you know, right. Just like, you know.
Nice hat, you know.
Right.
You know, yeah. So that was, but he did, you know, he was able to get the information from him and they were able to, you know, find the location and.
Well, they found the location because of Lizzie and the goodnight mother thing.
Right.
That's what Hastings, when the light went off, he said goodnight mother and then Lizzie put that together with the amnesty.
Right. Well,
Chica.
Which is where they found her, you know, her place.
But yes.
The red piece was able to go in there and red, which is also very symbolic of how Red was able to give the stay of execution. It was like Red was the guy with the evidence.
Right.
Red, it's a real dual thing. Like Red was the governor, the judge, all things. Like he came in and sort of said, this is why this guy needs to live or die. There's so many interesting things happening there in terms of, you know, symbolism with Red and also talking about this whole, like, who should live or die and blah, blah, blah. But also, even more importantly, the fact that Red has Cooper's, you know, fate in his hands. I mean, really, he literally does. But he does the right thing and gives the evidence and gives one of his great monologues and speeches about sort of like, I know you're in this for the justice. I know you'll turn yourself in. Mm-hmm. And then he turns to Harold Cooper and says, don't look so grim.
Don't look so glum, Harold.
Don't look so glum.
I got to say,
the gag in his mouth.
It was a great speech. It was well delivered. And But why...
Uh-oh.
Why is Red the one who gets sent in? Like this, I mean, for theatrical purposes, I completely agree. But man, why you FBI doesn't have anybody who's able to talk? They don't have anybody who can.
Well, Red was the one with the evidence.
Red's got the evidence.
Oh, I get why we did it for the show. No, I'm saying for the purposes of the FBI, would you really send in your secret weapon?
Right.
And,
well.
To talk?
Maybe not. But the thing is that Red's got the credibility. So whatever Red's going to say, like, it's kind of like one of the things where, you know, you're gonna have a wrestler deliver that message? Like, you know, who's going to deliver that message?
Well, this is my point, is that we have this sense of the FBI is small. Like, there's only wrestler and there's Red. Those are the two options. And then there's guys that run around with guns and get killed. That I'm just saying, you know, there's a scope to the FBI. All I'm saying, I get it. It's a show. I know. I enjoy that. I'm just saying.
It is a very small secret unit. Like, even, like, no one knows what Harold Cooper and his guys are up to. They're very tight. And, yeah. Like,
do you ever wonder how the FBI existed before Red Reddington?
I just wonder how they caught anybody.
Ever. I don't think they did.
I don't think they did.
Not once.
Right. I think they got a lot of people wrongly convicted.
Probably.
There was a plastic think tank thingy dingy that was bulletproof and bombproof, they didn't have anybody.
I concur.
You guys are being very funny.
I'm glad they built it.
I hope you're proud of yourself. But I will say that Cooper and the gang do not represent the entire FBI. They represent a portion, a unit, a very secret, super secret unit of the FBI, as they made clear today when he's like, what are you doing down there? I heard you got some secret weapon and your unit's doing this other thing. They're very, very specific part. Yeah. So it's not like the entire FBI is running around not knowing what's going on.
All right, so Red breaks it down that the military intelligence officers they had to extract their asset from this village, right? Then the Taliban got word, they came to the village.
Yes.
They were too late. The Taliban killed everybody, burned the village.
Yes.
Right. So Red says to Dan Weiss, you know, you got it. One thing about execution, you have to be right. And I'm not in here for them. I'm in here for you because you've been right about all these things.
Yep.
And I don't want your legacy to be destroyed on this. Here's the thing. Now, we are given the vibe at the end of this that, you know, because Megan Boone comes up to Harold and she says, here are all these case files that we found at the judge's compound. And he says, get them over to justice. Mm-hmm. And
that was good.
Yeah,
that
was
good.
That was my Harold Cooper.
Yeah.
Do you now in real life? No effing way.
Why?
Because it's too messy. There's no chance. I would bet everything I own that there's no chance in
hell. Bury those files. Burn them. Shred
for real.
Them.
You got all these guys who just got released. Do you think they're going to turn around and investigate them?
Yes.
All right.
It's the right thing to do, Joe.
I agree. It's a very pretty idea.
Truth, justice, and the American way, Joe.
Ta-da! I'm just saying, whatever. Not happening.
So then we see, you know, that, you know, Diane Weiss at the end sort of getting a taste of her own medicine, doing the perp walk and doing the same walk that she says. There's a little sort of bittersweet thing there because you know, at the end there, she's almost a sympathetic character, but she's really done some nasty things.
She's done some awful things, yeah. But it was never about vengeance. It was about justice. She believed she had been screwed by the justice system when it was her father lost 30 years of his life because he was wrongly convicted.
Yep.
Let me ask you guys a question. Is she a bad character?
Well, that's
she's
the
misguided
question.
in her efforts, but I think it comes from a good place.
Are we to assume that everyone she had in there and was feeding slop and sort of keeping there were really, really, really horrible people that got?
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. This is perceived threat versus actual threat, and this is a phenomenon to modern culture.
Yep.
If somebody's got a tannery downriver or upriver from your town, and he's poisoned your town and given 150,000 people cancer, he gets a fine because he's doing illegal dumping. But if a kid breaks into a liquor store and steals $20 in that same town, he's going to go to jail. Now, this is perceived threat versus actual threat. This man has given 150,000 people cancer. He's obviously a much better, bigger threat to the community, right. But he's not going to be punished as such. Is she wrong in taking these people who stole lives? You stole life. You stole lives from other people.
Right.
Is she wrong in putting them in prison, even if it's her own self-made prison?
I mean, it depends on it. It really depends on we really know if these guys have done what she suspects of them of doing.
Did you get the vibe? She was discredited at the end. She was ready to kill these two men
exactly
because she believed Rifkin, and she was incorrect.
So she
had to be done.
So well, right. Then that was
there's also the actual conditions in which she was keeping them. If this is strictly eye for an eye and not revenge, the jail conditions are a hell of a lot better than what they were living.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I've never been to jail. I have no idea. But I'll tell you this. You know, you steal from people's lives like that. I don't see her as a villain. I really don't.
All right.
That's my two cents.
Well, so that was wrapped up. We saw that. Let's jump into my boy Tom, who I knew it that MF is dirtier than the back of a Hustler magazine. Dirtier than the classifieds in the back of a Hustler magazine, I should say.
I vacillated. I was all over the map. I was in. I was out.
I tried so hard to be out. I tried.
Yes, my girl Katie K on Twitter, Katie K's 00057 says all the dirty Tom sayers say yay.
Yay for you. I don't get to claim it.
Yeah, hell I was out for a while.
Yeah,
but,
so,
you know, I got to say, thank God they gave him some balls finally.
Yes.
I was so sick of him.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to look at him anymore, and that's saying a lot.
So we get, and that was, you know, so we have the little back and forth. He's at the teacher conference. You know, Jolene's laying it on really, really super thick. They have the little
kind of like finally got a hot moment there.
Hot little moment. Waiting for that. Then the kid busts in, and then they
ruined it for me.
Ruined it.
Ruined it for them.
They have another shot at, she does the move where she like gives him the hotel key.
That was a good move, by the way.
I'm sorry too.
She walks away.
I'm not sorry.
Taking a moment and comes back. That was a good move.
That's a good move.
Well, I shouldn't remember that, but
no.
It's a good move.
In another life, that would be a good move. And you know, I like the whole scene where he's deliberating and he's got the whiskey and he's throws it back and he slams it down. He grabs a key and he goes all the way down there to say, "I'm not going to do it." I don't know.
She was ready and waiting for him too.
Yeah, she had a little. She was real, you know,
a little negligee, some red lips, staring out the window.
I mean, she
greets him with a kiss.
I mean, she was at least a 7.5. But that's
that elevated, right? Man.
Yeah. Bump it up half a point there for you.
Elevated.
She was ready to go. He gives that speech, and then in the moment that we've all been waiting for.
Wrong.
Yeah, on both sides. She says, wrong answer.
I love my wife.
Her whole demeanor changes. Yep. His demeanor changes. And then his whole thing changes. And I got to say.
And that was some Top Gun acting right there.
Top Gun actor.
That was some Top Gun acting by Thomas Keane, by our man.
That was kind of badass. Ryan Eggold. That was kind of cool.
He did a good transformation.
Yeah.
There, which is,
I was proud.
I was proud of that too. However, the issue that I have with the whole, and I knew Tom was there the whole time, but I just feel like they've cheated. They've cheated us a little bit because we had so many moments of Tom alone like by himself, and so many moments of him where the, you know, where we as a viewer, the camera's on him and he's alone, where he doesn't have any suspicious sort of like look away the camera, you know, he's always like and so you never get a sense that even when he's by himself, he's not, you know, this guy, and all of a sudden he's like, I knew it, you know, whatever. He's like, he's all of a sudden he's changed, you know. I don't, you know, the glasses, I don't know, we'll see. But
Elizabeth Keene is
maybe
your wife.
He's like
your
the
target.
Daniel Day-Lewis of Spidem and really lives it 100%.
Yes.
He's making shoes on the side.
Yep. So living in a tent.
So which begs the question now. So now we go back to Red, you know, trying to get all this information on Lucy and / Jolene. My man has collected, my man 10-gallon hat has collected all the info.
There's a lot going on in her apartment.
A lot
there
going
were
on.
Quite a few identities.
Yes, and they... And
there was some cash of different denominations.
He says he's either got a lot of little targets or one big one.
Mm-hmm. And she seems to be popping up everywhere that Red's been.
And she's got all that
Vanna,
stuff.
Vanna, Prague, where else?
Oliver.
Other places.
And he says, you know, look, she's on an op now. Yeah, she's on an op now. Let's see how the thing plays out. So, I mean, that could mean a lot of things. I mean, she's there to kill Tom. She's there to check up on Tom. She's there to take Tom out. Like, there's so many different things that could be happening with that. And even then, when he's like, did they send you? Like, we don't really know what Jolene's real purpose is. I mean, we don't know if she's a good guy or a good gal or a bad gal.
And we also find out that Tom hasn't heard from his people for 2 years.
Right.
So he's been left in the wind.
Yes.
With the most boring, awful wife of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting.
She's awful. Worst wife ever.
She is. She's a terrible wife. And it's funny to me because I was like, God, Tom, you should probably hit it with Jolene. And, right. And you know, then when it got to the end, and I was actually kind of relieved in a way. I was like, you know what? He's not cheating, but he's not cheating because it's his job not to cheat, not because right. He doesn't want to. So that made sense to me. I almost gave him like credit for that in a
yeah.
weird way.
He's dedicated to his job.
Yeah. It's not the marriage. It's the job.
He's a method actor.
He's that good.
It's a method spy.
So we do see in our previews, though, we finally get some action. We see some ass whooping, some Tom Bourne identity shit jumping off. Tom.
Oh, there was a palm strike to the somebody's nose. It looked like Lizzie.
It looked like Lizzie. It could be Jolene. It's you know, it looks, I don't know, but it looked very, 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 very cool. So I don't know, man. We've got that heated up the entire episode. I mean, the whole, you know, judge and the, you know, the execution versus, you know, what's, you know, should we not be doing this and the government, blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff was great. But the meat is when we got back to the serialized moment of it to see this, how things got sort of wrapped up here. We finally got some goddamn answers.
One huge answer. One ginormous. Mm. And still, it's not fully answered, but there's been a big payoff after 15 episodes.
Yeah. And then
finally.
We're going to have like a week off, and then we're going to get into, you know, April, and then we'll get to the home stretch in May. We'll get some.
You know, I got to say, they did their job well. I was lulled into submission with Tom. I hated on Tom for a long time. And then by this point, I was like, you know what? He is a husband who has been put upon, and this is bullshit. And. She needs to give him a hug and pat him on the butt and tell him he's pretty. Aww. And now they lulled me into sticking up for him.
Well, I can't wait to see how this thing plays out next mm-hmm. week. I do have some ideas, but let's 2 weeks exactly. But let's jump into predictions and hear yours as well.
And now your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Before jumping to predictions, I want to thank you all for joining us on iTunes and downloading us and rating us and making us the most downloaded and great show that we are. We appreciate it. We were still working hard to be great in these last 7 episodes or so. All of you guys who always check us out, Dave1555, Stamp600, MDS, 1978, Jaw Girl, 314, Stephanie LaPena, Ashley Kearney, Bridget Shea Wadstone, Newsby Bird, Just Because 84, TR Canb, you know, Super October 71, Amika Groove, Kathleen Trask, Ruben Carpenter, Abby Wax 480, and who did I forget? Holistic Health and Living. Thank all of you, and oh, and Vanilla Cupcake, of course. And
is Holistic Health and Living trying to sell you something?
Yes. And Caitlin K, thank you very much. And Dirty Tom Sayers say, yeah. That's what she said. Anyway.
Yeah.
So let's get some predictions. What do you think, Joe?
I think our girl, Julian, obviously, is she going to activate Tom? Is she not going to activate Tom? I don't think she's going to activate Tom. I think Tom is from an extra third organization of some sort, but maybe Jolene knows about it. But I think Alan Alda has something to do with it. Alan Alda and his secret group, his cabal, is it, but Tom has been like there for a long, long time. So obviously it's about Red. It's not about Liz, because who cares about Liz? So,
is there a prediction?
I think that that Tom is. I'll tell you this. Here's my prediction. So I think that at least next week we're going to get. At least I want to hear Tom light Lizzie up about what a crap wife she is. I do want to hear that.
Okay, I like that. I like that prediction actually, Julia.
I think that since Red knows where she is, he made sure that we knew that he knows where Jolene is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he'll somehow find a way to now, after this exchange, prove to Lizzie that Tom is dirty and expose him to Lizzie. And I think her end game is Red, not Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Jolene. And I don't know. I don't think they work for the same agency.
I don't either. My prediction is that she works for... I think she's somehow works for Red. In a double reverse of all time, she works for Red. And she's... I feel like that works for her, but she is somehow... Maybe she's gone rogue. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. But
all right.
Maybe it's a thing where she was there to keep an eye on Tom. Tom's the real threat. He's always said your husband's not who he says she is. Tom's always been a real threat to Lizzie. Jolene's there to sort of take him out or see what's going on. But maybe she's gone rogue.
But I don't think Tom is... I don't think Tom is a... bad guy spy.
Okay.
I don't he's think not he's bad guy. He's a bad guy, but he's Lizzie not a bad out. Guy.
A target? Lizzie's the target.
He didn't say that. Jolene said that. She's not your wife. She's a target. She's your target.
Oh, I don't know.
They send you?
Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe. I was about to give your Twitter. Why not? And you can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. And my website's josephsanflippo.com.
Julia.
I don't know, Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
Find me there, please. My name, Julia Carely, JuliaCarely, and then here at AfterBuzz for all of our millions of shows that we do.
Yes.
Good ones, guys.
Twitter and Instagram for me, at Joe K. Braswell, at Joe K. Braswell. Twitter and Instagram, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks for The Blacklist.
Woo!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.